This is John Abrams, and this is The Variety Artist, episode 53. It's been an entire year since I started this venture. Happy podcast birthday to me! Yay! I've done a lot of these interviews, and I discovered something very interesting. Almost every single performer I've interviewed has one thing in common. It seems the most successful entertainers in the world have performing in their blood. No matter what their circumstances were when they were a kid, no matter what their parents did, no matter what their friends said, they persisted, found what they loved to do, and didn't stop until they figured out a way to make their love their career. Heck, I didn't even start making a living doing magic until I was 34 years old. I was a struggling actor, just scraping by, trying to raise my family. But I never gave up. It was somehow in my blood. Somewhere between 29 and 34, I discovered magic. I discovered that I can make a great living performing. So that's what I've done for the past 20 years. In this interview, you're going to hear exactly that. How a guy had little kid dreams of being a pirate and a magician, and how he combined both to become one of the most successful acts in the country. Have fun!
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
My guest today takes entertainment specialization to a whole nother level. Not just a Jack Sparrow impersonator, but the pirate performer. In fact, he's created and performed an entire pirate act. Juggler, magician, and ventriloquist, variety artist, I give you Ace Miles.
Hello, John.
How's it going, Ace?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Now, we're going to talk a lot about your pirate adventures, but before we do, what did you do before that? What kind of magic and juggling and ventriloquism did you do before that?
Well, I was just Ace Miles, professional funny guy. For a long time, I had 1-800-4-FNYGUY, and my license plate said FNYGUY. I was basically I've always been a family entertainer. And so I looked at myself as sort of a stand-up comedian with props for kids instead of being a clown, magician, juggler guy. I never called myself really a magician or a juggler.
Sure. Although you did all of them, right?
Yeah. Magic, juggling, and ventriloquism. I started with magic when I was like 5, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, the standard thing. You learn something out of a book.
Yeah.
Your aunt's helping you read, and that's her thing to motivate you to read. And so I learned to read before I was in kindergarten because of magic.
Oh.
And then went to the magic shop at Disneyland when I was 6, bought my first trick. Still didn't realize it was a thing until when I was 7 and saw William Wizard on stage. Changed my life. And I said, wow, that's what I want to do.
So at 7 or 8 years old, you knew you wanted to become an entertainer?
Of course.
At 7 or 8 years old, I knew I wanted to be a performer. I didn't quite know exactly magic or juggling or what I wanted to do, but I knew that I wanted to entertain.
Yeah, I also wanted to be a pirate at that time too, though. That all happened when I went to Disneyland the first time and rode the Pirates of the Caribbean, of course. This was in 1968.
Uh-huh.
I was 6 years old. It had only been open for a year, the ride itself, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So they were still promoting it like mad because it was like 2 e-tickets or something crazy at the time to try to recoup their money somehow. So you buy e-tickets and you spend it on that ride.
That's right. And by the way, anybody who's too young to know what an e-ticket is, when I was young and when we went to Disneyland, it wasn't an all-inclusive pay one price, go on any ride type of thing. You got a little booklet that had e-tickets. I think they were like, what were they? B tickets and C tickets.
Oh yeah.
But the E ticket, those were all the good rides.
Right. Yeah. You got a whole book to start with when you paid your admission, then you could buy more books or individual tickets when you got in.
So you're a young kid and you go to Disneyland, and you see the Pirates of the Caribbean and they're promoting like heck. So what happens then?
Well, I of course wanted to be a pirate. And literally dressed like a pirate. There are pictures of me on Facebook dressed when I was 6, you know, getting ready to go, because actually there was a Wonderful World of Disney thing that said Walt was talking about the coming ride, and I was so gung-ho on this thing. I was like, wow, yes, I want to go. My mom's like, oh gosh, how am I going to get them down there? She figured it out somehow. And little did I know there was a magic shop involved, and I had never heard of such a thing. Of course, at that time period, it's quite likely that it was probably Steve Martin helping me at the time, because it was the same, you know, he worked in the magic shop down there. But that was where I hung out, was one of the two magic shops. There was one in the castle, and there was one on Main Street.
Right.
And I was there like throughout the days that we were there, the 2 days that we were there, or 3 days, whatever. I was in there. My mom's like, let's go on this ride. Nah, let's go check out this sponge trick with these little sponge ball thing.
So at what point in time do you say to yourself, well, I'm doing this magic thing, but I also enjoy this pirate thing? Well, at what point in time did you combine the two?
The pirate thing happened, whether or, you know, the magic thing happened or not, that was just every Halloween I started dressing like a pirate.
Oh.
Or a vampire, because my mom kept saying, you can't always be a pirate, be something different. Oh, okay, I'll be a vampire. Okay, now going to be a pirate again? When I was 14, I did my first professional magic show, got a check from a corporation called Data Products, made $50 for a half hour kids show.
Great.
And that was what started it. At every holiday season, I booked more and more shows, met my wife when I was 18, got married, had a baby, all within a year.
Now, are you doing the pirate show while you're starting to raise your family?
No, I'm just doing magic shows as Ace Miles and still dressing up on Halloween.
As a pirate?
As pirates and stuff. Actually, Beetlejuice came along eventually, and that took over.
Well, he's kind of like a vampire pirate. So you have best of both worlds.
This is true. In 83 or 84, I had been married a few years. I got married in 80. So I was working doing tableside magic in a restaurant in Cupertino.
Okay.
I was seen by another restaurateur, and he hired me to perform at his restaurant in Los Altos.
These are all Northern California places, by the way.
Right. South Bay Peninsula sort of region, land of Apple computers and Facebook now, put it that way. This ended up being a French restaurant with a theme, and he wanted a magician to perform tableside, but I had to wear roller skates.
Okay.
All the waiters and waitresses and everybody, the French balladeur was going to be on roller skates. Everybody except for the clown, who would be on a unicycle. And everybody was dressed like a pirate.
Oh, ironically.
It was a French restaurant called Les Pirates. It was way ahead of its time. It didn't last long, but I had the best 2 years dressing like a pirate and performing, doing magic.
Awesome.
Proof of concept, essentially. I also began performing at the same, around that same time period, I was performing at Great America, which was the local amusement park in Santa Clara, California.
Well, let's get into that real quick. What kind of show were you doing there?
I started off demonstrating magic in the magic shop, actually, when I was 16.
Another full circle.
I was there as soon as I turned 16 and could actually get a work permit. I demonstrated magic in the magic shop there.
But how did you go from the magic shop to doing a full-size show?
Well, I left there, and not on good terms, really. I realized, this is stupid. I'm selling junk. This is terrible. So when I met my wife, she said, oh, you used to work in that place? That's a terrible place. That wasn't a magic shop. And that was how she told me that her dad had done magic as a kid.
Oh.
Because she dissed the magic shop. And I was like, yeah, it's terrible. I know. I ended up going back auditioning as what they called the Street Fleet with Dean Hankey and a mime named Heidi. And we all performed together sort of on the streets of the park, doing basically atmosphere entertainment. Mm-hmm. We were the very first ones at that park. And that kind of got my foot in the door, met people. Later, I came back and proposed performing my own show. And I ended up doing the Ace Miles showcase there on a stage. And then I ended up sort of opening for their larger shows on their stages. And then I ended up producing a show called Adventure Ace and the Test of Doom, which was a spoof of Indiana Jones films, with juggling and an illusion or two and bullwhip tricks.
I was reading that you have dozens of sculptures at Disney. Is it Shanghai?
Disney Shanghai, yeah. The new park that they opened there a couple of years ago has a huge Pirate Cove area because they don't really have Rivers of America there. It's Shanghai. Mm-hmm. So they have various different but magical things. And one of them is a wonderful pirate area, which has an amazing Pirates of the Caribbean style ride with Jack Sparrow and everything and the newest technology. And oh my gosh, I could die happy if I got to go on that ride.
Oh, really?
Some of my sculptures and stuff. And by sculptures, I mean everything from barnacles on the side of a bottle to sea life, like a octopus or a squid or something on a treasure chest or something.
Okay.
And that came about because of my pirate world where I would get hired at the pirate festival in the area and they didn't have a huge bunch of money, but they'd say, and you can have a booth. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
What am I going to do with this booth?
Yeah.
I had a bottle I had made so I could drink Gatorade all day and make it look like a barnacle infested, covered, encrusted bottle, scummy. We call it muck. Like it had been on a shipwreck and I'm drinking out of that. Looked like something out of the film. And everyone said, wow, where'd you get that? Where can I get one? And that, ka-ching, there it is.
Said, I happen to know somebody who has a booth that happens to have some.
Exactly. And so the pirate shop was born. Mm-hmm. And I sold bottles for a while, literally. A lot of sculpted bottles. And then they became things like, I worked with another sculptor. She would color stuff. She had a really good sense of color and that sort of thing. And so it opened up the world from just skulls and crossbones on the bottles to, oh, sea life. What a great idea. Colorful. Girls like that.
When you go to a show now, you go to a fair or festival or something, do you have a booth?
No, that took a lot of time to make those little things. And I went back to performing because performing on the big stage at the Pirate Festival, I got a lot of great video.
Oh, yeah.
That became a demo reel, which became a website, which led to the seafood festival, which led to a different festival, which led to, once you get in the circuit. And I had a pirate ship. Well, a shipwreck.
Let's talk about your pirate ship, since you brought it up. How'd you come up with the idea of creating a giant, a good-sized pirate ship to take with you to fairs and festivals?
I'm a pirate. You got to have a ship, right?
Yes.
I did sail on a pirate ship for about 2 years in the bay. It was a small ship, a replica of a 1740s dispatch gunship, a weird little ship called the Royalist. She was a real wooden vessel. So I learned a lot about, as they say, I learned the ropes. Mm-hmm. I worked the foredeck. I worked the mizzen deck. I actually learned how to fire cannons, load cannons, and not blow your hand off.
Wow.
Did that for 4th of July's. Cities would hire us to come into their port and fire off cannons over, with the fireworks going above us, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Did that for a couple of years on the weekends. And it was, I became a real pirate.
Yeah.
Drank a lot of rum, had a lot of fun.
It's like a dream come true for you.
Absolutely. But I wasn't the captain. I was just a deckhand. I was an able-bodied seaman. I was a fellow pirate. I was a mate.
Okay.
I needed my own ship. Somewhere along that, in that time, I started doing pirate stuff on Halloween. Everybody knew it. Someone said, hey, go check out the antique store downtown in Alameda. We went down there and sure enough on the wall, there was this figurehead, this big, beautiful lady sticking off, looked like a ship had just run into the the wall and she's poking her head through. And I said, how much? They said, $200. I said, sold.
Yeah.
I was going to mount her on my wall. I took her to one of these small pirate festivals down in Ojai and mounted her on a barrel that had a mast in it. And everyone said, wow, she really needs a ship. And I said, yep. So I got laid off from Sega games.
Yes.
Ran out the door and became a street performer. Mm-hmm. after years of not having performed anywhere really, I ended up going back and performing anywhere I could, which was like Jefferson Street in San Francisco, way down on the wharf in a parking lot with my daughter. And we did the Sword Basket.
Yeah.
Worked our way up, auditioned at Pier 39, got a spot on Pier 39 very shortly with all the fellow performers I'd performed with at various festivals and functions throughout all the years, just as Ace. And here I was, Jack Spare Ribs all of a sudden.
Oh. So what made you decide to take that lady that you had bought for $200 and turn her into a ship?
I got severance pay.
Oh.
What was I going to do with a big check like that other than spend it on building a ship?
Mm.
Right. No, what had happened was I had made sort of a plan, an escape plan in the back of my head, and actually on paper, my wife and my daughter had put it together. My wife was in a wheelchair all of our marriage. So she wasn't able to work. She's a stay-at-home mom, and she would answer the phones and things for me when she could, when she was younger. And then eventually she wrote a lot of material for me. She sent out a lot of brochures for me. She was my personal assistant, my manager, that kind of thing, basically.
Nice.
Doing what she could from home. She was this amazing force, you know, sort of behind the show. Anyway, I'm not even sure where I was going with that.
That's okay. What was it, her idea? Was it kind of a mutual idea to do the ship?
It was. Basically, I guess what I'm saying is she was my support system. She indulged my every whim, sometimes to her detriment.
Well, it kind of reminds me of the Richard Dreyfuss movie, Close Encounters, when he's building the mountain out of mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Here's Ace building a ship.
Yeah. I literally got laid off. My wife said, go back to performing because this is not healthy for you, sitting in a cubicle being depressed. And I said, I think you're right. I'm going to go back to performing. I said, where should I perform? She said, you do have nothing booked. We could go back to booking birthday parties if you want. I'm like, no, my goodness, I can't picture that again. I'm older now. My God, I'd die, you know. But I had done a few as the pirate for neighborhood kids that saw me during Halloween. Mm-hmm. And I said, I could do something at your party, sure. And that was how Maynard the Talking Monkey was born. I turned one of my old Dudley the Talking Rabbit, which was my character from before, I made them with skins so I could take them off and wash one or clean one or reskin one while the other one was performing. So I took one of them, took the shell, and made a monkey out of him instead of a rabbit.
Okay.
And that was Maynard, took him to a couple of shows and realized this works. So when I decided to quit the animation industry and go back to performing, I had sort of an idea. I had a game plan in the back of my head. And my wife and my daughter had supported that and kind of been collecting all my thoughts and ideas on paper and stuff and surprised me with this whole package of, hey, here's your plan.
Yeah.
Right when I was laid off. And I was like, oh, I do have a plan.
They had the plan for you?
Yeah. They had actually been, they took my notes and things and kind of stole them from me, borrowed them from me, scanned them, did things with them, laid them out in a plastic covered folder, all professional looking. And it said the plan.
Yeah, nice.
I was like, what? And it was actually for my birthday in January.
Oh, great.
Literally 1 month before I got laid off, actually.
Mm.
So they handed this to me and I was like, wow, you've been paying attention. They're like, well, of course, that's all you talk about. I'm like, oh. A month later, I get laid off, and they're like, well, you have a plan. Go for it.
Here you go.
It was not really feasible at the time to make money right now. I didn't have any money to spend except for the severance package. And, well, I went and bought a welder on Craigslist and bought a bunch of metal, bought a brand new trailer, and drove it home, proceeded to cut a hole in the top of it with neighbors looking, going, what are you doing to your – you've lost it. You bought a – $3,000 trailer and you just cut a hole in the top.
Who's this crazy guy?
What is going on? It's Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
Exactly. the plan was to have two trailers, one for the bow of the ship, one for the aft, have a hole blown in the middle. The doors would open up and be the wings of the stage. The stage would be a dock in the center of it. Oh, yeah, that would be another trailer. Wait. That's three trucks. So I took the front half of it, which was finished for that particular pirate festival. I took it to the pirate festival. It was a hit. That September, I got booked to do this kids festival, and my daughter and I said, we need to finish the back end of the ship and take it with us. And so we did. That kids festival was sort of proof of concept. A year later, I was booked at a fair in Colusa County, a little tiny fair. Mm-hmm. They had seen me at a Renaissance fair. They said, we would love to have you in your ship. And so yeah. I brought the ship. That got me into fairs. I found out about the fair conventions and things that you go to. And since then, I've taken my ship, I don't know, several times now up to convention centers and set her up in hotels and stuff.
I would think that would be a huge selling point for fairs and festivals that you, well, other than the space consideration, I would think it'd be a huge seller.
It is. Well, actually, the space consideration is a good thing in many fairs. Smaller fairs, obviously, yeah, they can't have it. But many fairs are looking to fill space and make it look cool and not just something where it's a facade and you can look around the back and go, oh, it's just a trailer.
Yeah.
And my ship is fully surroundable. You can walk all the way around it. So it's an attraction. It's a backdrop for my show. Mm-hmm. It sort of sets a little pirate cove feeling. I put some barrels out, some crates and things with the show. Instant ambiance.
Yeah.
Festivals and fairs love that because it's not just, here's a guy on a stage doing a show. That's nice. Here's a guy on a stage doing a show trying to have a theme. That's nice. Here's a guy doing a show in front of a pirate ship. That's a theme and a half.
That's a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing all of a sudden. And I've just started adding in even more as an upsell to the fairs.
I was going to ask about that. Is the ship an upsell? I mean, do you sell yourself as the...
I do.
How does that work?
Yeah, it's you know what? It's a really good question because I'm wrestling with it, constantly wrestling with it. My girlfriend will tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the convention with me. She was new to this. She met other performers and realized, oh, he's not going crazy. You all are going crazy. It's that time of year. There's no work. It's January and February, and you're here spending several thousand dollars on a convention hoping everyone's going to book you later this year. Uh-huh. Yeah. You've lost your bloody mind. And you've got the stress of doing the marketing yourself and getting your ship there up in the snow and getting it set up in the casino showroom floor where you're having the trade show. So, yeah, what do you tell them? When they say, how much do you charge?
Yeah.
I don't know, how many kids are going to be at your birthday party?
Hold on.
Did you want me to make animal balloons? No, wait. No, it's a whole other thing at the same time. It's the exact same thing. Where are you going to go for how much money? Are you going to really charge mileage? No. How are you going to do this? So you have to have a plan. And different performers do it different ways. Some people demand you have to have a room. And some fairs say, we don't ever provide rooms. And that's a crapshoot. You never know. So do you charge more and then give them a discount if they have a room? You know, there's all these things to think about. Meanwhile, yeah, I've got, basically the way I do it is I've got three tiers now. I've got my show, the Captain Jack Spare Rib show.
Yes.
Which is portable. In other words, I've got a monkey in a suitcase over here. I've got a trunk full of junk over here, magic props, juggling props, whatever. It's the show I do at a library. It's the show I do at a birthday. It's the show I do at a small festival. It's the show I do when this fits in the back of my small car.
Right.
I charge accordingly. Fairs and stuff, you charge by the day usually. You don't charge per show. And usually you're doing strolling with stage shows or something. So that works for me. Being a character, I can just say, meet and greet, hello. I can do that for a whole however long you want. Mm-hmm. Cost the same.
Yeah.
Then the next tier up is a bigger show and the ship attraction. The show is only bigger. You can't get this bigger show without having the ship. because I don't want to have to go rent a trailer to bring all the crap for the bigger show. Okay. Basically, the ship is a trailer full of show crap.
Oh,
you are paying me to bring the bigger show and paying me for the trailer to pull it. And, oh, yes, you're going to pay me to have that trailer dressed up as a pirate ship.
Yes.
And that takes me, usually I allot an 8-hour day at least, because it's probably going to be 100 and whatever degrees in the middle of the summer in Bakersfield or wherever you end up.
Are you talking about 8 hours of setup time?
That's right.
Okay.
Because there's rigging and a skirt that goes around the bottom so you can't see the wheels of the trailer. Mm. There's the beautiful figurehead lady that I bought in the antique store that gets bolted onto the front carefully because she's fiberglass. And then there's the, you know, the bowsprit that goes up above her. And then there's the mast and it's broken and it's hanging down. But you have to make the mast actually stable because it gets windy places. So it's actually rigged with shrouds and stays and everything like a mast would be, stuff I learned on the ship. Mm-hmm. So I've got my ship. I actually rig it each time and I put it up. And it doesn't take me that long. I can get her up by myself in 4 hours easily if it's indoors and it's air conditioned. If it's really hot outside, oh, you got to stop, get climb down that ladder before you get dizzy, drink some more Gatorade.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hot. Put the gloves on this time. Go back up. Okay, don't touch that. Right, that's hot. You know, I mean, it's that kind of thing. So I charge accordingly.
Oh, I see. Oh, one summer, the summer theme was 2001: A Space Odyssey, and similar to your story about the heat, I auditioned at the showcase and booked 100 shows or something. But I did it in a space outfit, and I live in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, the showcase was in January, which was nice and cool and nice and cold, and it was perfect. But then I didn't realize that all the shows were booked in July and August in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. And you're wearing tinfoil and plastic.
Oh, yeah. But I committed to it and I did it. But I said, I will never, ever do that again.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've done that so many times. The Indiana Jones thing. I love costumes, I love characters. I love pain, apparently.
We just don't think ahead sometimes.
No, it's, you know, and you're excited. The little kid comes out and goes, let's dress up. Let's have fun. And, you know, then the show must go on takes over. And
Yeah, and you have all these great ideas. Hey, this is a great idea for this particular market. This will be really fun. I'll dress as Indiana Jones, or I'll dress as a spaceman.
You mean you'll dress as a Jack Sparrow-like guy that has a wig full of wool dreadlocks on his head?
Oh, in the middle.
Wearing a sash over a linen shirt over with a vest over that, with a 12 feet of sash wrapped around your waist with two leather belts around that with giant leather. They call them bucket boots for a reason, because they fill up with sweat like buckets.
Oh, gosh. So do you think ahead at all when you say, gosh, I'm going to book something in July in, you know, some hot area?
Well, yeah, sure, I do now, but I didn't then when I came up with the concept of doing this. I didn't care. I just wanted to be a pirate.
There's no turning back now.
That's right. And you get up on top of that ship. Now I'm talking about sitting in my trailer dressed like this, manipulating one of the Steve Axtell puppets outside the ship in between my shows. I'm going to put air conditioning in the trailer, but I hope I won't die.
I hope not.
I think it'll work.
All right, we're going to play something called Fact or Something John Just Made Up. Sound like fun?
Sounds great to me.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
I'm going to give you a headline, and you're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
All right.
Here we go. First headline. The year Ace dropped out of high school, he was married after only 8 weeks to an audience volunteer from one of his shows.
That's true.
Oh, tell me about that.
I kind of mentioned before that I got married young.
Yes.
But it was within a year, basically. I dropped out of school when I could, as soon as I turned 18, because just to prove a point, I was tired of hearing, you can't be a magician for a living. You have to go to college.
Yeah.
You cannot do that. You won't succeed. You must do this.
Yeah. I think everybody listening to this has probably heard that from somebody.
Yeah. And I just was one of those people that said, that's it. I've heard it too many times. Don't tell me I'm not going to do this. And rebelled and said, I'll show you. And so I dropped out of school because I had already been on television. I had already worked and performed and gotten paid. And I'd never worked at a Burger King. I never had a paper route. I worked in the magic shop. That was my first real job. Mm-hmm. And then I had my own business essentially. And they didn't get it, that I just wanted to hurry up and move on to bigger and better things. Now, if one of them at the time had been smart and said, okay, sounds like a great plan. Who's going to book your shows for you? Oh, really? Who's going to do your taxes for you? Oh, really? Who's going to do your marketing for you?
Yeah.
Maybe you should learn some of this if you're going to have to do it all yourself because you don't have money to pay someone else. Maybe you should, you know, instead of saying, well, you need something to fall back on. It was more of a point me toward my future that I want and help me figure out how to get this. And you're going to get more out of me than telling me you can't do that. You can't do that. You're not listening to me. You can't do that. You have to do this. Oh yeah. Well then how did I do this? Well, that was a fluke. Oh yeah. Well, I did this. Oh, well that, I actually had a counselor say basically,
what
they said, you have to have something to fall back on. You can't, you know, you can't do this. And I said, they said, well, what if your hands got cut off and you couldn't do magic anymore?
Oh, yeah.
They got so frustrated. And I just went, oh, you're right. I'm gonna go be a brain surgeon. Wait. What if my hands get cut off?
Uh-oh.
No one wants them to be operated on with their toes. You know, I was just like, what are you talking about? I'm out of here. And that was it. That was when
I'm like, hey man, if my hands get cut off, I'll just have a hook. That's all. Two of them.
Now? Yes. Exactly.
All right. So an audience volunteer comes up, and how do you end up marrying the audience volunteer?
Well, it wasn't as easy as that. This was a show that I was doing during my first summer of freedom. It was a benefit for MDA, Muscular Dystrophy Association. My wife didn't have muscular dystrophy, but she was sort of lumped in under their umbrella because she had been diagnosed with a thing called Friedreich's ataxia. Mm-hmm. Friedreich's ataxia is a neuromuscular disorder. So it got lumped in with MDA kind of that, with research. Mm-hmm. So she was going around helping raise money for the telethons and things like that. And that's what this show was. And we were doing miserably because it was just in a bad location. We weren't getting any audience. She came to say, hey, you guys, we really appreciate you doing this wonderful show for us. Even though it's not making any money, you losers. They said, there's going to be a young lady coming from there. She's in a wheelchair. We had some kids in the cast, and they're primarily toddling, you know, letting the kids know we don't know what to expect. She might not look like everyone else. You know, they're trying to be polite and say, don't stare, don't point, don't say anything rude to the kids. Around the corner comes this gorgeous, tan, amazing goddess in a throne on wheels.
You're like, dang.
I'm like, she's not like other people. And I turned to my best friend standing next to me and I said, I'm in love.
Oh.
And he turned to me and he said, I know, your girlfriend's right there. And I said, not her, her.
Oh.
And he said, shut up. And he hit me. After that weekend, that was Friday, she came back to the show on Saturday and we had a cast party, and that was where we officially met. Except during the show on Friday night, I needed a volunteer, and literally there were two people in the audience. She was one of them.
Okay.
So I used her in the trick where I made a silk disappear and reappear, and she held this, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then after the thing at this cast party, that was her excuse to talk to me and say, my dad learned magic, and when he was a kid, blah, 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 magic shop, not a real magic shop. Oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
It was an icebreaker. She ended up kissing me that night. I think that was just she had too much to drink. But that was it. I told my friend I was in love. I meant it. And here she was. And then we were inseparable after that. 8 weeks later, we were married.
Oh.
We were married for 35 years before she passed away.
Oh, and she passed away how long ago?
3 years. Three years in January.
Oh. My wife and I separated 3.5 years ago after 25 years of marriage, and I'm still working through it. I can't imagine. All right. Well, I guess we'll go on to the next one. All right. Go on to the next headline. Are you ready, Ace?
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. Ace once had a weird experience with Johnny Depp. They stood there looking at each other for 3 minutes, saying nothing.
Absolutely true. No, that's not true. That's not what? True. You made that up.
I did make that one up. I can just picture that in my head, though.
But you that's guys exactly what would have happened. That's in my head. I pictured meeting him, getting the chance to say anything I want. And for $1,500, I could have the opportunity.
Oh, is that what he did? Wait, what is that?
Yeah, I just passed that up. My girlfriend is taking me to see The Hollywood Vampires, which is Johnny Depp and Alice Cooper and Joe Perry, the rock band that's playing with them. Yeah, they're going to be in San Francisco, and I'm going to go see their show. Yes, you can buy the ultra extreme meet and greet package. You meet them backstage, you talk to them, you get selfies with them, you get an autographed picture with each of them, the full treatment. It's only $1,500. Come on, man.
Yeah, why aren't you doing that with your show, Ace?
That's right.
Yeah. Meet and greet, $1,500. You can have a picture with me and...
Come meet the monkey. You can put your hand in my monkey for $1,500.
Oh, there you go. You can do anything you want for $1,500.
That sounds wrong.
Hold on. All right, next headline. In 1 year, Ace kept his daughter in a basket for more than 18 hours.
That's true. It's actually probably false. It was probably longer than that.
Is it true or false?
It's true, but probably a lot more hours, actually. I can't add and count and things. I dropped out of high school. Come on.
Yeah, there you go. So you kept her in a basket?
Yeah, on stage.
Oh, on stage.
14 minutes a show.
Oh.
She was the girl in the basket for the sword basket. I had a routine. It was my street show, a routine where it's the standard sword basket routine, but instead of four swords and a spike going down the middle, which is really lame, looking at that trick is kind of like, I can see where she is. And that was when I said, well, I'm going to put swords in these corners. I'm going to put spikes going all the way through horizontally, cutting it in quarters, and as well as the one going down through. And I have it up on a table, so it goes actually all the way down through. It's a pole that goes down through, and I stick a torch on the end of it, light the torch, and pull it back up through the basket. The basket catches on fire. I mean, it's a crazy trick. I have a guy standing on stage behind the basket to make sure she doesn't sneak out. And then he's the guy that ends up sticking a giant spike through the basket from the back, all the way through, and it starts with him pushing. I tell him just gently push the spike through the basket, and nothing happens. And I say, go ahead, just gently push the spike through the basket. Nothing happens. And he's looking at me like, no, 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 dude, it's, you know, hitting something. He has this look on his face like, trying to psychically tell me, it's not working. Your trick is screwing up.
Yeah.
And that's when I say, oh, is it hitting something? And he says, he nods. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's hitting. Oh, that would be the girl. Just give it a shove. And that's when it looks like he rams the spike all the way through. And I throw my hands up like, oh, my goodness. You know.
Yeah.
And then we put another one through the other end to end, front to back, all that. And then I end up putting all the swords, eight different swords, every angle as quickly as I can. The audience is now pointing, you know, because they're like, they don't want to say anything. They want to wreck the show, but the basket's on fire. Kids, yeah. Of course, are going, and I'm like, yeah. No, what? And I'm busy putting the torch out. I'm like, yeah, I've got it. I'm putting it out. And I have big welder's gloves on, and I'm smothering this torch in my hand that was underneath the thing. Meanwhile, the basket's on fire. And I look and I go, oh, good. Perfect. It's not too late. And I run over to this box and I pull out this stick with marshmallows on it. And I start roasting the marshmallows above the flame.
Perfect.
On the basket, which then catch on fire. Now I drop them on top of the basket. Now there's an even bigger flame. Mm-hmm. Now the audience is screaming. I say, oh, wait. No. It's not too late. I run over. I grab a fire extinguisher. And from under the basket, I shoot the big, you know, fire extinguisher plume of white goodness comes ripping out the top of the basket, puts out the marshmallows, puts out the lid. And I say, oh, good. I don't think it's too late. And I pick up the marshmallows and I look and they're just completely black. And I say, oh no, too late. I pause the beat, look at the lid, lift it and say, too late. Gets a good, you know, like a chuckle, a dark chuckle from the crowd.
Oh yeah.
And basically then I, of course, you know, say, no, did you think I was actually going to light my daughter on fire? And I go into the pitch basically because it was a street show. And eventually I climb up on the table. I cover the basket. They think I'm going to pull her back out. Instead, I stick my hands down in it. I step into the basket. I jump up and down. I squeeze down into the basket. And I say, are you crazy? You think I'd actually put my daughter in a wicker basket, stick swords through it, light it on fire just for your entertainment? Are you kidding? No, we do it for your money. And as I'm saying that, I'm standing up.
There's the pitch.
I whip the thing off and she's standing there. I say, come on up. Drop something in the bucket, blah, 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 blah. And it's a killer thing because they can't leave. They have to see if she's alive. They have to know if she was actually in there. They have to know. And people that walk up midway, what's going on? And so they're all, what are we doing? We're staring at a basket. Oh, what's in the basket? I don't know. I got here too late. Something's in the basket. I think he's trying to kill it. You know, I don't know what's going on in their minds in the back of the crowd, but something's going on. The people that just walked up, is he trying to stab? Oh, is he going to burn it? He's trying to, was it some sort of rodent? What happened? No, it's his daughter. His daughter? Yeah. His daughter in the basket.
Gulp.
Yeah, no, you'll see. He's going to bring her out. No, he's not. You can only imagine what people are talking about because, you know, trying to explain to someone that just walked up. But it happens. The crowd builds and builds and builds and no one can leave because now we've got to know what happens. Is it going to be okay? The drama is amazing. It's a great routine.
Great pitch.
But my daughter spent 14 minutes a show in a basket.
That was Fact or Something John Just Made Up.
We're going to go into some fan questions. You want some fan questions there, Ace?
Sounds like a great idea.
Joe Goslin, he has illusions, laughs, and more from Alberta, asks, as a performer with different theme shows, is there anything you did differently for promo with your Captain Jack spare ribs so people could find you?
Not really. I should have, I guess. Part of it is for what I do, because it is a parody of an existing character, not just a character. I, of course, am looking for hits on my website, people searching for Jack Sparrow, because I'm not that character. But it's so funny. I go out dressed with other pirates, not as Jack Sparrow, just as a pirate. Not the braided beard, no hair at all, you know, just a bandana.
Where do you go with your pirate friends? You said you go out?
Anywhere we want.
You just go as pirates?
We're pirates. We can go anywhere we want. No one stops you.
Okay.
No, I live in the Sacramento area, and a friend of mine in the Sacramento area is the one that actually got me inducted into the Order of Leviathan.
What is that?
It's an international brotherhood of order of pirates, okay. Brotherhood and sisterhood of international pirates from all over the world. And they induct 13 new members every 2 years. And I was inducted 3 years ago.
Oh.
I have the tattoo to prove it. No, seriously.
What does your tattoo say?
It's just the orders. It's a Leviathan with a skull, and a Leviathan is a sea creature, a serpent.
Okay. So now back to Joe's question.
Yeah.
Is there something on your website? Do you use SEO as magician or pirate, or how are you doing all that?
That's the difficult part. So I use a lot of verbiage on my page just to try to explain so it will come up in searches. If people are searching for pirate, if someone's searching for Captain Jack Sparrow, if someone's searching for Johnny Depp, if someone's looking for me, they're not looking necessarily for me. They're looking for someone like me.
Mm-hmm.
People call you Jack Sparrow, even if they mean the word pirate, but they say Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
Then again, I get people to call me Jack Black all the time.
Oh, is that right?
All the time. Hey, Jack Black. I'm in full Jack Sparrow costume. Hey, Jack Black. Yeah, I'm a short, round guy with a guitar in School of Rock. That's exactly what I look like.
You got to start carrying a picture of Jack Black around with you.
Gosh, no kidding.
This is me. This is Jack Black.
And just go, really?
Really? Is there really a likeness? Check this out.
Yep.
All right, next fan question. Mark Daniel, the founder of Kadabra International, says, Ace is the real deal. That's all. No question. Just
no. That's a question.
That's what he said.
A question mark. Ace is the real deal.
Yeah. We're gonna go to Eric Henning. He's a speaker and magician out of Maryland. Asks, how have you avoided being sued by Disney?
That's a big question people ask all the time. And the parody thing. Parody laws are quite clear, and you can look them up online. I did. I didn't hire a lawyer. You don't need to unless you're being sued. The thing with Disney is they will go after people for little tiny infractions of their copyright infringement. Preschools that paint Mickey Mouse on their walls outside and stuff have been made. They will just show up with a bucket and say, paint over it. I mean, you know, they take enforcing it quite seriously. However, if you're not breaking anything, and I do know people that have gotten cease and desist letters from Disney. It's because they're advertising not in one place. They're advertising in different states. All of a sudden, it becomes a bigger picture. And they use the name Jack Sparrow in the advertising and stuff like that.
So what is the rule? If you're doing a parody of the character, it's okay? Or what is the actual law?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. If you're doing a parody, it is okay. But then you have to make sure you're doing a parody and not just, hey, I'm dressing up like him and riding his coattails and saying I'm a parody. You actually have to be a parody. In other words, parts of the costume have to be changed. You cannot be 100% spot on. That's an impersonator. I'm a different character. I am a spoof, a parody of Jack Sparrow. I usually will say things in my show. I'll say, I'm Captain Jack Sparrow. It gets a laugh. Kids will say, no, you're Jack Sparrow. And I say, no, that's Johnny Depp. He's an actor from Hollywood. I'm a real bloody pirate. You can tell by the smell.
Oh.
Gets a good laugh. And I said, no, really. He smells like he's from Beverly Hills. He's got his own scent in Macy's. I, on the other hand, I smell I smell.
Just simple as that.
Right. I'm poking fun at the whole thing constantly. I don't wear the same exact things he does. I don't have the beads he has in his hair. I don't have the beads, dangles, and things. My beard has stuff, sometimes one braid, sometimes two. Depends on my mood. To be a parody, you have to be enough like the character to be obvious. Mm-hmm. So you have to, people have to initially say, oh, look, Jack Sparrow. Oh, yeah. Wait, that's not Jack Sparrow. That's what you want in a parody. Otherwise, it's not funny.
Yeah.
If it's not, if you have to say, no, I'm Jack Sparrow. Oh, right. Yeah, I see that. No, you can't be that. That's not a parody. That's an idiot. You know, mm-hmm. You have to be close enough, yet you can't cross the line.
Yeah.
You can't go too far. You can't have a big sign that says Jack Sparrow. You can't.
You can't have a sign saying, I'm Jack Sparrow. Look at me.
Exactly. And that sometimes happens. And then they get dinged. They get in trouble. But also Disney kind of dropped the ball with Jack Sparrow because they didn't think the movie was going to be a success at all. Mm-hmm. And they didn't market his stuff initially. And they didn't complain about people doing things. And what they, I think, realized is by not trying to squash the fans that dress up like Jack Sparrow or the performers that keep him in the spotlight, it keeps him in the spotlight. They mm-hmm. realized it's a money thing. It's like, wow, we dropped the ball, but these people are selling Jack Sparrow t-shirts. We could sue them for selling Jack Sparrow t-shirts, or we could let people wear Jack Sparrow t-shirts around and advertise Jack Sparrow. You know, so that's kind of, I think what they had to do is, do we bust everybody because we dropped the ball and they filled the space that we left? Or do we let them do this and we make three more movies?
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of, I think, what happened. They realized, oh, this got out of control. Then when the new movies came out, they had all the new stuff. Now at that point, if you tried to make t-shirts and sell them or something, they would have just squashed you.
Gotcha. Well, it's kind of like the theory about in the olden days, we entertainers used to always say, no pictures, whatever you do, don't take pictures, don't take video. I don't want my show escaping me.
Right.
And then later we discovered that, oh, if you take pictures and videos and put it on your social media, it'll actually promote us.
Well, a lot of performers, I think, don't want video of them out and being seen that they haven't approved because maybe I screwed up that time.
Ah.
The blooper ones are the ones that are going to be the funniest.
Yeah.
And the people are going to watch the most. Deal with it. No news is bad news. You're in the news.
That's right.
No matter what you're doing, no one's going to remember that. They're just going to remember that you were in the news.
Yeah.
Why try to stop something that's going to happen anyway? And yes, embrace it and run with it. Because now it's free advertising.
It is now.
Boy, back when I was young, starting out, if I had had the internet, if I had had video like this, because now I'm trying to play catch up and I have my YouTube channel with my puppet and I have all this stuff I want to do. I don't have time to do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have the time. All right, we're going to move to Michael Warsham, an amazing entertainer out of Maryland, asks, how many different puppets do you have in your show?
Well, let's see, Michael. In my show now.
Yes.
Depending on the show, if I'm doing the Pirate Palooza, I have Bob, who's a monkey, Bobette, who's a monkey, and Maynard, who's a talking monkey. And sometimes now I have Paul the parrot, who's not really a parrot. He's a toucan, but he thinks he's a parrot. And that's my animatronic puppet.
All right. Well, I've taken enough of your time here, Ace. Do you want to promote any social media or anything else?
Go check out what I do at Pirate Monkey TV on YouTube. That's mm-hmm. Maynard's channel. I haven't posted anything recently, but I was teaching magic tricks on there for a while. I'm going to change the format. I just moved recently, so I'm going to be putting new stuff up there. I could use some subscribers and people watching my videos. Other than that, it's just jacksparrowribs.com to see what I'm doing out there in the world. You can find me on Facebook, Jack Spare Ribs. I'm totally accessible and I like meeting new people. And so to all the other entertainers out there, keep it going, and I like meeting people face to face.
Perfect. Well, thanks, Ace, for doing my show.
Thanks for having me, man.
And to all my Variety artists, I'm working hard for you on my resources page. We're going to have the best photographers on that page and the best CRM that you can use, all sorts of wonderful things. You can reach me at john@thevarietyartist.com and join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask questions of our guests. Now go out there and book those gigs, make that money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.